Let me just read the first few verses of Matthew chapter 6. Be careful not to do your acts of righteousness before men, to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues, and on the streets, to be honored by men. I tell you the truth, they have received the reward in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. In a past life, I often went to Sicily, the island at the end of Italy. And it was like another world for me, having come from the UK, to be in this very kind of closed society and in this very religious society. And I'll never forget, on a Sunday morning, I think it was, around the period of Lent, around Easter time, I was driving at 4 in the morning, to the airport at Syracuse. And as we drove along the highway was full of people wearing white gowns and walking barefoot on the highway. And I said to the person driving me, "What on earth are those people doing?" And he said, "Oh, well, you know, they've made a deal with God. They've asked God to do something for them, and this is their way of paying for it. So they've asked God for some special favor, and now they're walking barefoot 25 kilometers to pay back God for what they've asked them to do." And a lot of people have that kind of attitude to religion, don't they? In Sri Lanka, the Tamil people will pierce their chest or their back with hooks as devotion to God. The Shia Muslims will hit their heads or beat their chests with devotion for God. And a question that springs to mind, at least to my mind, is why do people do that stuff? Why do people do all that stuff? Why do we do what we do? Why do we do our acts of righteousness, as Jesus calls them here? Why do we do religious acts? And if you're not religious, why do you do moral acts? Why do we do good things at all? And that's the question that Jesus is answering in this part of the Sermon on the Mount. We saw in Matthew 5 that he was talking about people coming to him. And these people are coming on a deep, deep level. They're not just engaging with him as an intellectual concept. They're not just coming to him in a church. But they are coming and they're being changed by him. And he says, okay, now that you've been changed, you will function, your life will have all kinds of elements to it that it never had before. And in chapter 6, he's starting to say, you got to think about why you do what you do. And this is an important principle. Do we do something because we're trying to get God to do something for us? Or do we do something because we are just giving back to God with joy? And there are a lot of people, and I believe people even in this room this morning, who believe that being a Christian is about keeping a bunch of rules. And you've been in churches like this all your life. Or for years you've been listening to people preaching. And you still believe that being a Christian is about keeping an arbitrary set of regulations. That somehow there's all of these rules that you've got to keep, and if you keep them really well, then you'll be a Christian. And the question that people like that always ask me is this: tell me what I have to do and I'll do it. Or at least I'll do the best I can. Just tell me what I got to do. Tell me what the rules are. And I'll keep them to the best of my ability. And what they're saying is, I'm going to try to impress God with a list of unpleasant tasks, and I will fulfill as many as possible. And if I can work really hard at being a good person and keeping all the rules, then God will be happy. Okay. That is not the message of the Bible. That is not the message of the Bible. Jesus does not come to people and say, here are a set of rules. He comes to people and he says, here am I. Here am I. Not a set of rules. Here I am. And Jesus did all of the unpleasant things that needed to be done. He suffered on the cross. He did all the penance that ever needed to be done. He took all the pain. And as he died on it, he gave it, made it possible for all of the punishment that ever needs to be given to anybody to be put on him. And when he rose from the dead, he made it possible for us to have grace. Grace is God's riches at Christ's expense. God's riches at Christ's expense. He makes it possible for us to have a free gift that doesn't have to be earned, that doesn't have to be worked for, that can just be received. And anybody who comes to him has their sins forgiven. They enter into a perfect relationship. And the amazing thing is this, if you this morning come to him and say, Lord Jesus, I'm sorry for my sin. Please forgive me. Do you know what happens? In the sight of God, you are in that moment as pure and sinless as Jesus is. When God sees you in that moment, he no longer sees anything but Jesus' goodness. That's what being a Christian is about. It is not about keeping a set of rules. It is about receiving grace, receiving God's forgiveness, receiving a new life that makes you a totally new person. Not only the way you behave, but in your standing with God. Please understand this. Please don't leave this room thinking that this is all about us giving you a bunch of rules. Because it's not. Please understand that this is about a gift. And you would have thought that everybody would jump at the chance, wouldn't you, of trusting Jesus and being forgiven completely for everything. But you know, rule-based religion has a lot of attraction. And keeping rules and making religion all about rules actually does something for us. And this is what we're talking about this morning. Because if you're into impressing God, you're probably into impressing other people as well. If you're into showing off something to God, you're probably interested in showing off to other people as well. And in this chapter, Jesus is going to talk at the beginning of Matthew 6. He's going to talk about three things. Giving, praying, and fasting. And we're going to be looking at these three things in the month of March. Giving, praying, and fasting. We're actually going to start with giving today. And a couple of us are going to be looking at praying. And when it comes to fasting, it won't be me, because I'm more of an expert on feasting. But no, I've got Neil Todman will be coming, who's a wonderful guy. And he will, I think, hopefully he knows more about fasting than I do. And I'm going to preach at his church that Sunday. What can I say? I'm not there yet. But it's not about keeping rules. But as Jesus talks about praying and giving and fasting, the message is all the same. He says in verse 1, be careful not to do your acts of righteousness before men, to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. The good things that we do are not done to try to get God to forgive us. We're already forgiven in Jesus. But we don't do good things so that people will give us a pat on the back. Like this, you know? We don't do good things so that people will see us and say, oh wow, aren't you wonderful? We don't do things so that we can feel good about ourselves. Instead, everything we do for God is like an extravagant Valentine's gift. And a Valentine's gift is not something that is given in public. It is something that is given in secret. And it's given from the heart. And it's not given with any expectation of giving something back. The very first words he says is, be careful. And in the original language, Greek, that this is written in, the word is prosecco. Now, I always thought prosecco was like a fine wine. But it's actually a Greek word. And it's a reflexive word, which means it's something you do to yourself. So it is. The word is used to describe a boat coming into the port. If you had a boat, a liner coming at the port here, and if it was coming at 10 knots, you'd be in trouble. It wouldn't be able to come into the side. It'd be going too fast. Prosecco is the boat coming into the port here and coming in nice and slow and steering itself into the place where it docks. And Jesus is saying that you have to be someone who is in the habit of examining your heart. You have to be someone who's in the habit of looking at your heart and saying, why am I doing what I'm doing? What's this all about? And you have to learn how to steer the ship of your heart, as it were, over the reef and into the port. You have to learn to steer your life in the correct way. Now, I know that when you say to people, look at your motivations, that there's a risk for that people become morbidly introspective. And there's a risk that people get so tied up in knots about why they're doing something that they stop doing anything altogether. And I don't want to run that. We're going to run that risk this morning, but I don't want you to do that. Get so tied up in knots about why you're doing something that you stop doing it altogether, because we need you to do stuff, believe me. But I do think that Jesus' words are important, and we need to let the light of these words shine back into the deep recesses of our heart. Jesus is saying, listen, if you're beating yourself up, or you're beating yourself on the head, or you're walking barefoot, or you got piercing your back with hooks, or you're giving money to charity, or feeding a homeless person, or you're speaking or praying in church, and if you do that in any way at all to make a good impression on anybody else, you have absolutely annulled any good that can come from that action. That action is now a bad action. A good action done for the wrong reasons makes it a bad action. The motives for doing something determine the value of what we do. Our motives for doing something determine the value of what we do. And nowhere more than the area of giving. He says, so when you give to the needy, do not announce with trumpets, verse 2, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets, to be honored by men. I tell you the truth, they have received the rewards in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. And then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. This is bizarre. In Jesus' time, when they went to the temple to give money, you know what they did? They got a trumpet player to play in front of them. Now, I play the trumpet, and it's pretty loud. I mean, it'd be like us giving and have Elaine playing the bagpipes in front. Like someone just come walking in front of you as you come with your money, and they would carry their money in bags, and they'd have this trumpet player playing a little jazz, you know, a bit like St. Louis, New Orleans, and they'd be walking there with their money, and they would go there, and they would go to the temple, and there'd be probably like a trumpet-like funnel. And they would put their money in, and the money probably would spin around the funnel, we think. It would spin around the funnel. And we know from another part of the Bible that you would know exactly what everybody else had put in. Jesus, in another part of the Bible, is there with his disciples, and they're watching people put money in, and they observe how much people put in. And so people would go there with great estate, and they would have this trumpet player there, and they'd be putting the money in, and everybody standing around and saying, oh, look how much money they're putting in. Now, you know, I think that's kind of ostentatious and weird, but this happens in churches. In the 1950s, my father was trained to be a minister, and they put him on a placement in an African-American church on the south side of Chicago. And on the first Sunday he went in, they gave him an envelope, and there was a place for him to write his name. So he wrote his name on the envelope, and as the offering came by, the plan was you put the money in the envelope, and then you put it in the box. And we do the same thing here, because you gift aid. So if you gift aid money, you kind of write your name on the envelope so that it can be claimed back for tax and everything. And that's what he did. He put his offering in the envelope and sealed it up, and as the bag went right by, they put it in the bag. What he didn't know was this. In the middle of the service, the preacher stood up and opened the bag. And he got each envelope and he read, Mr. and Mrs. Jones. Opened it up, looked inside, $35. Mr. and Mrs. Smith, $70. Oh, man. Mr. Winston, $40. Wayne Detzler, 25 cents. Embarrassing. Embarrassing. But this is the way it's done. People do things to make an impression. And you sit there and you think, well, surely £100 is better than 10 pence. Surely $70 is better than 25 cents. And that's because we believe that money has some kind of importance, which it doesn't. Jesus is the Lord of the earth, okay? He can magic money out of nothing. He could fill this room with money in an instant. He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. He fed 5,000 people with some bread and fishes. And Jesus sees money as it actually is, a piece of paper with a meaning attributed to it by an economic system. For him, the important thing is your motivation. The important thing is why you're doing something. And you don't do anything so you get noticed. You don't do anything so people can look at you and say, aren't you wonderful? Now, two things we're going to look at this morning. We're going to look at what is giving for us? What does giving mean for us? And secondly, what is our motivation? Because this giving is primarily financial, but not only. These people not only gave money, but they gave sheep and goats and other animals to be burned on the altar to reconcile them to God. And giving is a multidimensional thing. And the Bible says that giving is part of our Christian life. And we give financially here. Many of us give standing order. And others use the box, the silver box we have there. And we put a percentage of our income together, and we as a church decide what we're going to do with that money. And that's a good discipline for us. It's a good discipline. Every month, we remind ourselves that everything we have belongs to Him. And we're not here just to serve our own interests. Every month, we determine that we're not just going to tip God out of our wealth. We're not just going to give Him a tip. But we're going to give a gift which is meaningful. And it shows a loving response to Him. And if you are a Christian and you are not giving, I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong. Because it's not about money. God can make money out of anything. It's about what your heart is. And it's about what your heart is saying. Are you saying, everything I have is mine? Or have you understood that everything we have is His? Everything we have belongs to Him. But giving is not just financially. The band are giving. They were here 2.5 hours ago. And they were setting up and getting ready. That's kind of giving, isn't it? Tuesday night, we're going to read the Bible and pray together. We're going to come out on a cold, wet evening. And we're going to encourage each other by reading the Bible and praying together. It's kind of giving, isn't it? It's kind of giving. Some of those here will go to the Wild Goose Cafe and they'll feed the homeless. That's the kind of giving. Others will reach out to people who are new. And they will make friends with them. That's a form of giving. Now the $64,000 question is, why are you doing it? Why are you doing it? What reward are you hoping to get? Just look at the passage again if you don't mind. In the passage, the word reward is used 3 times. In verse 1, we have a reward from God. In verse 2, we have a reward which comes from people. And then in verse 4, again we have a reward from God. See that? 3 times he talks about reward. And the implication is that there are 2 types of reward. And one is permanent and lasting, and the other is temporary and meaningless and doesn't satisfy. And Jesus is saying these people who are going to the temple with money, with trumpet players, their motivation has nothing to do with God. It's about getting people to notice them. And if we're honest about ourselves, we have to look at our actions. And I have to do this first. I'm not sitting there pointing a finger. I got three fingers pointing back at me. Why? Why do we do what we do? And we have to look at everything we do and determine whose interests are we serving. Is what we do authentically good? Or are we like a D-list celebrity going on comic relief, trying to jumpstart a flagging career? And in my experience, as I've examined my heart, I have found at least 3 motivations for giving, which have got nothing to do with God and everything to do with me. A need to be controlled, a need to be noticed, and a need to be needed. And I felt all of these 3 motivations in my heart. And I'm sure none of you have had any kind of problems like this. And what I'm about to say is nothing not applicable to you. But if you don't mind, just take a couple minutes with me and wander through the recesses of my heart. And we'll blow out the cobwebs together. Is that okay? See, we give, so many people do good things because they need to be in control. They love managing people. They love to lead. They love to be in charge. When they're in school, they were the little person in the middle of the playground saying, you do this, you do that, you're in, you're out. And they were in control. And as they got older, they've learned to push buttons and bully and get people to do what they wanted. And when they come into the church situation, their acts of righteousness have got a hidden agenda. They need to be in charge. They need to be in control. And when they're in control, they feel powerful and they feel fulfilled. And it lasts for a while and they get a wonderful payoff. And it's that payoff of feeling that they've moved people around. You know what Jesus is saying? Jesus is saying, enjoy it. Enjoy that feeling of power. Enjoy it. Because that's the only reward you're going to get. And that's the only impact of anything you do. If you do something because you want to control people, then that is the reward you'll get. And that will be the impact of what you do. That and nothing else. Other people need to be noticed. And we crave attention of others. And we long for the pat on the back. We want to be the star of the show. And as we lie in bed, we fantasize about the good things we're going to do. And we fantasize about the result. And we can imagine ourselves in the future, and someone comes to us with a wonderful result, and they say, it's all down to you. It's all down to you. And we can see ourselves in our fantasy saying, no, no, it's all about him. When I hear that, I just want to barf. It's so sickening. So sickening. And Jesus is saying, listen, enjoy the fantasy. Enjoy the daydream. Enjoy it. Make the most out of every pat on the back. Lap it up. Bask in it. Because that's the only reward you're going to get. That's the only result of what you do. That pat on the back is what you're going to get from that action. There's not going to be any spiritual, lasting impact whatsoever. Otherwise, needs me to be needed. It's like that song by Cheap Trick. I want you to want me. I need you to need me. I'm begging you to beg me. And we run around putting out fires. We get involved in situations. And we say, oh, I'm so busy. I'm needed all over the place. And you know what? We can't relate to people as friends. But we relate to people in a condescending, patronizing way. And in our lucid moments, we ask ourselves, why don't I have any real friends? Why is it that the only relationships I have are the ones I nurture with people who are dependent on me? Jesus says, enjoy the business. Enjoy it. Enjoy starting everybody's life out. Enjoy being the Messiah. As long as you understand that that smug form of virtue is the only reward you're getting. It's the only reward you're getting. It's the only product of your work. And these people love evangelical Christianity. They really do. The one who is motivated by the need to control loves to exercise power. The one who needs to be needed loves the uncritical audience. The one who needs to be noticed loves the pat on the back. But understand, they have already had all the reward they're going to get. All the result of their actions has already been realized. And the last thing I want to do is to stop you giving and serving. I really do. I don't want to tie you up in knots. But before God, I have to ask you, what is your motivation for your acts of righteousness? Why are you doing what you're doing, even here at BC3? And I think you should examine your motives. Because if you and I serve God with the wrong reward in mind, our work will be wasted. And we do more harm than good. And I want to say something else. 5 years from now, there are some people here who are probably in overall leadership of a church like this. So you'd better work out your motivation right now. You'd better work out right now why you're doing all of this. You better figure out right now and be ruthless with your own heart and determine in your own heart why you're doing what you're doing. There's a reward that's so much better. So wonderful you can't even put it into words. It's hard to describe. Let me begin by what Jesus says. The Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. God does a lot in secret. He really does. And he's done a lot in secret. The one who spoke and brought creation into being. The one who sustains all things. The one who was at the side of the Father in heaven from eternity, hid his divinity and became a man. And in secret he lived amongst people. And he gathered around only those who would hear his voice. And in secret he taught them. And in secret he healed them. In fact, when he did a miracle, he usually told the person who had been healed, don't tell anybody. In secret he hid his own identity. And the one who came in secret allowed himself to be slandered and misunderstood and falsely accused and nailed to a cross. But at that moment something wonderful happened. The innocent died. The one who never had any false motives and never used people as pawns. The one who never did anything wrong was crucified on the cross. And God put on him the punishment for all of our grubby motivation, all the bad things we've done. And as he came back to life in public. Spoke to 500 people after his resurrection. And for 2,000 years, the message has been preached all over the world. And the reward which is given for what is done in secret is something which is not visible, but which is overwhelmingly better than any pat on the back, virtuous feeling, or dependent relationship. The person who gives themselves in secret to God is healed. They're healed. And his love comes into your life, and you feel a new confidence, and you understand his unconditional love, and you feel set free from your past, that the mistakes of the past become the past, and you're divorced from them, and you feel affirmed by the King of the universe. You learn to trust him. You learn to realize that his way is better than yours. And you give sacrificially, with joy. And as you find yourself giving, you realize he's giving you 100 times back. Jobs, blessings, happiness. And you give of your time. And you realize even your energy is renewed. And you find a new set of relationships. And you have the joy of building bonds with people as friends. Relationships that make life meaningful. And as you give your time to prayer and Bible study, you find that you have strength and guidance. And you experience what the Apostle Peter calls unspeakable joy, full of glory. And you find yourself in situations where, yes, you need to give. But you don't do it grudgingly. You don't do it with a desire to be in charge. In fact, you don't want to be in charge. You want him to be in charge. And you're happy to serve in secret. Because you no longer need people. You no longer need people to pat you on the back. You no longer need people to recognize you. Because you already feel complete. You don't need other people to make you feel complete. And here Jesus coins a phrase which is in the English language now. Says, don't you let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. And we often use that phrase in a negative way to talk about a group of people who are kind of disjointed and each going in their own direction. But Jesus uses it in a positive way. He's saying the life of a disciple, the life of a person who has been filled up by me, is a life of self-forgetfulness. Self-forgetfulness. With no element of scheming or plotting or secret cravings, no hidden agendas, no ulterior motives, we become people whose every action is authentic, who are in a situation and they respond authentically, just in a straightforward way to every situation. And sometimes that authentic response is a response of love. And sometimes that authentic response is a response of mercy or care. Sometimes that authentic response is a rebuke and a challenge. But there's no hidden agenda. The consequences are amazing. And the impact is eternal. And the reward is wonderful. And we become people whose actions bear fruit. We become people whose actions bear fruit. I want to tell you something. Being a Christian is not about keeping rules. He gave all of himself for you. He gave all of himself for you. And what he's looking for is not that you spend time doing stuff for him, but that you give all of yourself to him. That you give all of yourself to him. And I want to challenge you this moment, in this second, to do something in secret. In the secret of your heart, we're going to have a moment of silence. I want to ask you to pray. Not out loud. Not as anybody can hear, but pray. And come to him and say, I want to throw in the towel. I want to give myself to you. And I want you to give yourself to me. Make me a new person. Won't you do that now? Won't you do that in this moment?